You're listening to Bedroom Beethovens, where notable music makers break down stories accompanied by songs and melodies documenting growth through their 10,000-hour journey. And me? Well, my name is Cello, your host.
I am a bedroom Beethoven.
Greetings, people of Earth. You're now tuned into episode 107. When she says hello to the world. When she says hello to the world. My guest this week is...
My name is KT, go by 14KT. I represent from Ypsilanti, Michigan. I'm producing, you know, since the mid-90s. Worked with a lot of people since then. Music took me on a crazy journey. I started with my hip-hop crew, Athletic Mike League, from Ann Arbor, Michigan. And from there, I kind of branched out and was able to work with artists from all the way from Dennis Coffey to Rock Marciano, Blue, Black Milk, Odyssey. Yeah, so it's a lot of people, but I'm just glad and blessed to be on this journey to keep going and producing from where I came from.
Like reusable articles, I know them demons are a part of you. You want to walk close to the light and it gets harder to. Scared to have kids, what about the sons and daughters? Way too selfish today to save tomorrow. Way too fly to save the fuel in your auto. Stay too high till it's food you gotta borrow. What society without common sense or social skills? Now labels want us to dumb down and chill. That's harder than putting your gun down when them boys got their guns out and ready to gun down at will. They say if you give it time, it'll build into a finish. But time is running out with no rollover minute. Skip the pole go. Now I'm on some grown go get it. Cause my own gon' get it. Regardless who with the I play my part from the heart. Now who witnessing? I sacrifice my life for the world to live again. Live again, live again, live again, live again.
Michigan's Carrot Gold Classic Kid. In the game since 1998. We're at year 23 with this thing, if my math is correct. It ain't no hobby, it's a calling. At this point, before we get to the conversation, thanks for rocking with me well into 2021. Swing by bedroombeethovens.com where you can buy a shirt, shoot me a message, and get info on past episodes, and sign up for the Patreon. It's the hub to fully support me. With that said, I'll keep it short this week because we have a lot to get into at 14KT. Just a quick and final reminder that this podcast is available wherever it is you get podcasts: Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Pandora. All the usual suspects. It's even on YouTube. Thank you for the support. Let's start the episode. Well, let's run it, you know, from the biscuit to where you are now. Let's talk about the whole 10,000 hours.
All right, let's do it.
All right. Well, first, from an SEO perspective, does the name that you have now serve you? Because if I Google your name, a bunch of necklaces come up, you know. So has has the name ever hindered you in any way?
No, actually, it really hasn't. I mean, I think it's probably the worst thing I'd probably say that kind of bothers me after a while is when people call me Carrot or like put Carrot in my name. That's probably the thing that probably bothers me the most, but. Besides that, I don't really care. It's cool.
I think personally, you're really good at marketing yourself. Like your Twitter bio is all the big names that you work with. Like, can you imagine if Denzel Washington had a Twitter and his Twitter profile was, or his bio was Spike Lee, Ridley Scott, Robert Zemeckis, the Hughes brothers, the Coen brothers? I think that's smart.
Yeah, true. I mean, it gets you excited when you see it all in one, you know, like right after each other, you know what I'm saying? So I just try to do that because sometimes when I read it, yeah, just like you said, when I read it, when other people do it, you know what I'm saying? It gets me hype.
So how are you holding up with, you know, social distancing, the new election, the news of the world?
It's a lot of bad happened last year than good. I've kind of stayed away from social media when it comes to a lot of having a lot of opinions on what's happening right now. I've been definitely, you know, talking with my wife and watching the news a lot and kind of trying to adapt to the change and what's happening right now and trying to figure out as an artist and as a person, like how to move forward, you know, through everything that's happening.
Yeah, because For My Sanity was written to deal with the world in 2018, 2019-ish. So it's almost like we're in sequel mode.
It's crazy. A lot of people actually hit me up about that album in recent times because of everything that was going on. People had a lot of time to kind of sit down in their houses and listen to music. So some people gave that record a chance and it hit a little differently.
Yeah, I think out of everyone I've spoken to, I think quarantine might have hit you the hardest because you said that the most inspiration you've gotten was being around everybody, like the Playlist fam. And when all this stuff started, it took a bit of time before you could start making beats again.
Yeah,
I don't know if you're just real enough to voice your vulnerability or everyone I talk to is just pretending to be okay with this pandemic. But every time I ask someone on this podcast if they've hit a creative wall, the conversation seems to morph more into how they had to pivot to other money-making streams.
Yeah.
But if we're just talking about waking up on a random Tuesday and discussing mental health, you seem to be a lot more honest about it than most people.
I mean, I feel like being honest about it is the best way to go through it, you know, and get around it. But I mean, as an artist, you got to be honest because to me, the things that happen in the world, they really directly affect me when I'm creating. Like, I'll literally be in the studio working on something. If I read something or get a phone call about something that kind of throws the energy off, it'll mess up my creative process. So with everything that's been happening and going on, it made it hard for me to work. So you just got to be honest with how things affect you and where you're at, because that's going to come out in the music too.
So let me ask you, when you graduated high school, how did that affect your music? Because you didn't stay in Detroit. You went to Jersey, you went to Florida. Were you able to achieve the same level of success in Detroit, or you had to get out of there?
Oh, that's a good question. I went to college for a year and I was in Tallahassee, Florida. I went to Florida A&M University, HBCU. That was around the same time I started to really record more professionally. Like, we had just got like a demo CD done that we wanted to press up and put out and ship out and everything. Like, we were getting real serious about putting music out. That kind of led me to wanting to travel different places. So I think that, you know, the aim was, you know, because I love so much like music from so many different places. Like, one of my goals in life was I wanted to live on each of the coasts of the states, like live down south, live on the East Coast, live on the West Coast, you know, live in the Midwest. And I was able to do that. And that definitely changed my music because of everybody I was meeting and, you know, so many different artists that blew up since then and came up around me, you know, and influenced me too. So
was that before or after the Thrill of Victory, the Agony of Defeat?
Yeah, actually it was crazy because we did the Thrill of Victory, Agony of Defeat the summer before I was about to go to college.
It's time for some drastic changes. Find these masqueraders. Unmask this blasted kid trying to pass is dangerous. The punishment needs to fit the crime. Subsequently, we victimize through succulent beats and vicious rhymes. When your sentence is finished and your life is spared, you wish this was a nightmare. Now when you see me, you kiss on my Nike ears. That's quite touching when you show a little love. But I'm the big hurt. You try discussing why I still mug and the rest just smirk. You don't deserve to be blessed with a smile. You need to be exiled. Somewhere stressed out, scrambling to make your text pile. Go in the next mile so you can emerge from the X-Files of this bitch. So we won't be wondering what happened to them kids. I apologize, but I'm afraid there's more to come. We're running this before we're done, cause we're taking over, son. It's time to seize and capture, bring this wackness to a closure. The Athletic Mic League, y'all, we're taking over.
And that kind of set things off. And obviously on this podcast, you heard Apollo call you an alien, right?
Yeah. Shout out to my brother Apollo, man. Apollo Brown. Both of us are aliens because, you know, we're kind of part of the legend of Cool Edit Pro. And that's like the software program that you use to make beats, because him and I are like known, especially from Michigan, as like the two cats using that program a lot to make our beats.
Being called an alien now sounds cool. But as a kid, maybe you didn't want to be so different in Michigan. Maybe having such a unique skill set alienated you or made you feel alone. You know, genius loves company. And sometimes if you don't have it, it can be kind of lonely. So how was it for you during that time learning your craft?
For me, that started when I was really young, because I started rapping and making beats, but not even my like good friends around me knew I did it, because I only did it late at night because I thought I was weird, because no one talked about it. No one talked about doing it around me, like the way that I was, you know, coming up with beats and whatnot. So I just felt like I was a weird person. So, but it didn't, it wasn't until I got older, I found out it was more people that did it. But around me, yeah, I would definitely say I was an alien, because I spent a lot of time by myself when I was creating, and I kind of figured things out on my own. No one really taught me how to do anything. So it was just kind of me growing up and figuring things out as I went along without a map.
So, I mean, being insecure and rapping at night, is that why on like the Binary Star album, there's a track called Fellowship and the AML was on it, but I was sad to see that you weren't rapping on it.
Yeah, man.
Crazy record, man. A 21-year-old Elzai was on that record. Yeah. And
yep,
man, if you like Rose Gold, then hop in your time machine and check him out as DJ Friction.
Oh yeah. Friction. Yeah. He was the DJ for Binary Star back in the day. And he's also the cousin of One Below, who was the main MC in the group. So it's a lot of history connected to all that too.
And AML, Mayor Hawthorne, became a big star since then, and y'all went to high school.
Yep. Mayor Hawthorne used to ride on the same school bus as me in high school. You know, he would get on the bus and carry his bass on the bus, and that's how I met him. You know, like it's crazy how the world connected us all, and we're still like working together today. It's great.
I think that, and I think you have a knack for working with people before they blow. You know, I think you have a third eye. You know, you were sending beats to Jay Electronica through AOL Instant Messenger. You sent him a beat like, what, 2009, you know, before he really blew up.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Like, you know, honestly, man, like, before Kendrick blew up and before Big Crit, those are the two, like, most recent where I was like, they're going to do something. Like, before anybody was really talking about them and I heard about them, I was like, they're going to do something. But I do feel like I do have an ear for dope talent, but it's like, I think everybody does. It's just kind of like, you know, just acknowledging it and showing it love. But like, I love, you know, always finding dope talent and working with dope talent.
What was his AOL Instant Messenger name? Do you still remember it?
Shoot, I have no idea. It was Jay Electronica in it, but it was like some numbers. I don't remember what the numbers were.
And you remember Tree City, the group?
Yeah.
So they opened up for Jay Electronica last year at the Blind Pig, so it kind of came full circle a little bit.
Yeah, dope. Dope, yeah. Tree City is the young homies.
Yeah, yeah. Young homies. Blind Pigs in Ann Arbor. You're from Yipsey, right? That's where you're from. Yeah, Yipsey, right? So
yeah, I'm from Ypsilanti. It's right next to Ann Arbor, so it's like, you know, like the Blind Pig is like, you know, home. It's not that far.
So what I gather is be warned that if you live in Yipsey, you will feel close to Ann Arbor, but your Ann Arbor friends will feel like Ypsy's far away. The same way if you live in Ann Arbor,
true,
you're going to feel close to Detroit, but your Detroit friends, they're not coming to Ann Arbor.
That's true. That's very true.
And Pittsfield Township, that's to the west. So it's all relatively safe areas though.
Yeah. Yeah. Pittsfield Township is, yeah, it's more to the west from Detroit, but it's like south. It's kind of like southwest. But to me, I don't know. I was in all these places, and I grew up in Detroit. I grew up in Ypsy because my family's from Detroit. So, you know, I was around all these places. So they're all like kind of the same to me.
Well, let's talk about something like, so DJ Haircut, we'll call him at the time, right? He leaves Detroit. He moves to LA. Peanut Butter Wolf scoops him up, signs him to Stone Throw. He's on Conan O'Brien. He's on David Letterman. His music's on Netflix shows, Xbox games. He's nominated for Grammy Awards. Now, you're 14 KT. You're just as talented, if not more, but you're semi-trapped in the underground. Do you get a little jealous? Do you start wondering, like, maybe the seeds of doubt start to come through a little bit? Do you have any, like, human moments?
Definitely not jealous at all. You know, seeing what he's doing with his career is, like, so dope to me. Like, the more stuff that he does, the doper it gets to me, because I saw where it started. You know, like I saw exactly where it started and saw where it was going. So everything that he accomplishes, from getting nominated for Grammys, you know, he's still, you know, even his last record, he writes a lot of that material, and he but people forget he makes the beats, you know, too. He does the production too. So I've seen him do all that stuff and develop as an artist. So I love it. You know, I'm never jealous of it. You know, no matter how much he'll, you know, recognition he gets, I'm never going to be jealous of it. I think it's dope. You know, he deserves that.
I love that because, you know, you, Buff One, and Mayor continue to do music. Maybe I was wondering, maybe that's how the other members of AML felt, because you guys were rising the ranks, but AML, they took a 15-year hiatus. But then I just listened to the new material, like Complicated. That song's amazing. The beat's nuts, and you guys haven't lost a step. And I think the only way to do that is not to be jealous, and you guys have genuine love for all of each other. So I love to hear it.
Thank you. Yeah, I think what people don't know is, like, you know, we talk, you know, almost every day, every other day. You know, we got group chats and texts. You know, text, so we keep up with each other. It's, you know, we're like family. We're like brothers. You know, we always check in to see what everybody's doing, what they're working on. You know, whenever a Mayor drops something new, he'll send us the new stuff before it comes out, you know, things like that. So we always check in with each other. When we were able to come together and create, it was more easier because it wasn't like we had to really pick up, you know, from where we left off. It was just harder because we hadn't been in the same place recording.
So when you're traveling, you know, when you leave Detroit and all that, I know you worked at a civil engineering firm. Was this around that time where did you need a day job to fund all these trips and do music on the side as a hustle?
Yo, when I was, that's a crazy fun fact. Yo, when I was working there at the engineering firm, it was in downtown Detroit. And it actually was around the time right before I moved to New Jersey. Jersey City. And I also worked there while I was living in Jersey City for this engineering firm. And it was really the, you know, I was only what, maybe about 17, 18 years old, doing CAD work, doing computer aided design, you know, designing blueprints and things for buildings. And, that was kind of what I was doing because I knew how to do it. You know, I didn't want to do it. You know, I wanted to do music. I always wanted to do music, but, you know, I was just using the things that I knew at the time, and I was really heavy in the computer. So I was just using that to make money. I would just get jobs, you know, where I could, you know, I had that job for a while because it paid really good. It took care of, you know, where I was at that time. But I really wanted to rap and make beats and buy equipment. So that was the point.
But that's how you were able to buy a house at 21.
That was a blessing to be able to get a crib at 21. But, It wasn't just that. It was knowing how to save, you know, like my father, you know, God bless my father and my parents, you know, for teaching me about investing, you know, stocks and real estate and things like that at a young age, that I was able to see the benefits of that when I got older. So, you know, that was one of the dope things about, like, my dad and my mom and the jewels that they shared with me.
Was co-owning a day spa a fruitful venture?
It was for a while. It got a little bit tough, but yeah, shout out to my sister Kendra. She that was a dream of hers, you know, she wanted to do, and we would always talk about it. So, you know, like, you know, I went in and invested with her, and that was cool. It was cool, you know. It was about, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 years she had it open before we moved and everything. But yeah, it was cool. It was cool. I'm in the seeing my friends and seeing my family do dope things. So I like to invest in them.
Yeah, I know Ro co-owned Burn Rubber Store, and I remember Eminem going sneaker shopping there with Complex a few years ago.
Yeah. I'm proud of him because I remember before he even started Burn Rubber and just the idea and how he bought out the store, you know, and made it his own thing. So I'm really proud of that dude. That was like, I don't know, maybe like 06, 2006, 2007. So he's been doing it since then.
So you're not the type of producer that's like, man, I really hope Drake calls me and gives me a bag. Like, you're understanding your market. You're learning about e-commerce. There's layers to this for you.
Yeah, I mean, if Drake hit me up, I'm still, you know, going to get the bag. But, you know, I got to be, like we talked about being honest, you know, like I got to be honest with where I'm at. I got to be honest with the people that have supported me since I started and be honest with me growing as a musician and artist and be open with them to know, you know, showing them what I'm doing. So I'm just aware of, you know, my environment and what I came up on. And, you know, I just kind of stick with that for now and just let that lead me.
Like, I think navigating in this current music space, there's many talented people out there who have no idea how to, for example, gain success on Spotify. Like, there's artists that get on those playlists every week, but they don't have that much material release, or they maybe have 400 Twitter followers. Like, how does that work? Like, people, artists with no albums, and they have a million listeners on Spotify. Have you cracked the code on that?
I mean, playlists, people know that, you know, in recent times, playlists are like the number one thing. A lot of people they discover a lot of new music. They hear a lot of artists, keep up on artists through playlists. So there's people that crack the code that know certain playlists to get on and know who to get their music to. And once you get on there, you get a lot of recognition, you know, and like you said, there's a lot of producers, even young cats, young producers that get on these playlists with one or two songs, and then they got a million listeners monthly, but they don't have no albums. They don't have no bio. They don't have anything out there, you know, for them to really attach to their identity, no live performances or nothing. So it kind of feels weird that there's a lot of new faces that are able to gain success, you know, behind the scenes without you seeing who they are, without you having an attachment to them, just hearing a song. So sometimes it's kind of weird.
Do you think you can buy your way onto those playlists?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like you can buy your way onto anything.
Because you have albums that, if I'm going to slap a stamp on, it could be hip hop, gospel, electro, soul, jazz with elements of Latin music and R&B, which I can listen to one of your projects. I can extract those elements, which is fantastic for your fans. But does genre melding start to become maybe the algorithms of Spotify hate that when they're trying to put your music on specific playlists? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't care about that. That's not really I don't think it's my problem. I haven't had a problem with that. Like, people don't really have a problem discovering the music or if it has it creates an issue with Spotify because of genre bending or creating. I just create. I don't do it for, you know, whatever slot that's supposed to fit in. But the good part about Spotify and all that, though, is just like we said, playlists. So it's like, I know I'm more of a album oriented type of musician, but it's still different songs. Like you said, like, there's different styles that I like to use in songs, and they may end up on many different playlists just because they're different styles. So it could be a good thing to help people discover my music, you know, from different angles too, as well. So
I'm glad you're not letting that stuff affect your music, man. I'm starting to see a lot of people take the Dilla route and making these 2-minute tracks, which is great. But I'm wondering if it's by design, or I'm wondering, man, songs are getting shorter because streaming services pay the same rate for anything 45 seconds or longer. So there's zero incentive to make long songs. A 1-minute interlude earns the same as Bohemian Rhapsody. So play count's a terrible metric of value, but you have to consider performance measurements.
I agree. That's definitely probably one of the factors why music is shorter. A lot of cats coming up with the Dilla beat sound, you know, you'll see online, there's always arguments and discussions about lo-fi music and chill music and putting these labels on this type of music because it kind of blew up again, you know, in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, I would say. And it's just because of where we're at. Like I said, like, it's just, you know, people are on their computers a lot. So they're in a Starbucks. Well, not now, but in a Starbucks or like some place where they're studying or listening to music all the time. So people use Spotify and streaming networks in their stores, you know, like in their clothing stores, in their coffee shops. So people like to hear instrumentals. So it kind of blows up that way. You know, if you're in a spa, you hear instrumentals. So I think it's everywhere, you know, and streaming is everywhere in every business. So it's kind of hard to stop that monster. You just got to kind of understand how it works and figure out where you fit in. with it. And me, I'm still trying to figure that out. You know, I'm really, you know, I'm not on a bunch of playlists. You might not hear my music on a bunch of playlists, but I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm still trying to crack that code for myself and see how my music fits into that, or how I can use that platform of streaming to my advantage, because it's kind of tough. We're trying to control it as artists today, but it's kind of tough because it's out of hand.
I think we live in a world of what's new and what's next, but when it comes to living a life of purpose and progress, sameness can be underrated. The greatest catalyst for change can often be found in the most mundane routine. You believe that God celebrates mm-hmm. consistency. You believe in the power of same.
Correct. I mean, power of same is, you know, that's rooted from my relationship with God. And that's regardless of what happens, what change happens in the world, what I might go through as a musician and what happens in the industry, I have to stay focused on the reason why I'm doing it. I have to stay focused on the purpose of why I'm doing it. And I have to check in and remind myself, like, this is why I'm doing music. You know, it's not for all these other reasons we might talk about. It's not for streaming and playlists. It's not for how many record sales I can get or anything that you'll see on a performance stat sheet. That's not what I do music for. That's not how I started. And that's not the reason why I'm still going. Like, I'm really seeing the effect it has on myself and making me better as a person. And, you know, also seeing the effect that the music is having on people that listen to it. And even the record, the power of the same in itself off of the For My Sanity album, you know, a lot of people listen to that record and pointed out things in there that I wanted them to get that wasn't necessarily on the surface level, you know, and that's how I know that my music is connecting with people, that they're listening to it on a deeper level. And that's what I want. That's what I want them to do.
Regarding your spirituality, right? What if you're 15 years old and the same week you're getting baptized in the church, you're enjoying Tupac and songs entitled "I Don't Give a Fuck," "Something Wicked," "Fuck the World." Mm-hmm. There's now a chance maybe your mom or the church wouldn't have approved, right? What if they took hip hop away from you?
You know what? That's a very great question you're asking, because you know, that's an honest question right there. You know, when I got baptized, I was listening to a lot of that music, and my parents knew I was too. And I don't know if a lot of kids at a young age have these conversations with their parents about music or whatnot. But my parents did have that conversation with me, because I was growing up, I was listening to N.W.A. You know, like in the N.W.A. movie where they come to Detroit to Cobo Hall, and that's when the police come. I wanted to go to that show. I was young, but I wanted to go to that show, and my parents would not let me go because of obvious reasons, of course. I was just always connected to it. Man, it's just, I'm thinking of how crazy this journey has been. You know, my parents, the one thing that they told me was, you know, we don't mind you listening to this music. We just don't want you to be going around calling people niggas and, you know, saying all the words. They didn't want me to repeat it, kind of. So I just told them I wouldn't. And they allowed me to listen to it, and they allowed me to create it. They allowed me to get into it. At first they didn't like it, but you know, they allowed me to express myself, and I have to be grateful to my parents.
Well, let's take it a step further, right? Let's say, you know, this is about what, 15, and then you go to college, you drop out of college your first year to go rap. Yep. And if I'm a parent, I would have been like, man, you see, I told that boy in church not to listen to Tupac. And now all those N-words and F-words, the devil made him drop out of college. Yep. Yep. But how did you keep the faith? How did you know God wanted you to do this when everyone in your life was against it or telling you it's the wrong thing? You needed some rock solid faith to know that rap was what you were meant for, or beat making or music, you know?
You know, the when I was younger, you know, around 15, 16, 17, I knew that music was playing some type of role in my life because of how passionate I was for it. And I had to really start to realize how passionate I was for it. It wasn't like me just playing video games and this is something cool to do. You know, like it was really like making me research. It was making me learn things. It was making me want to keep up with my skills. It was helping my memory. It was doing all these different things. I was like, yo, it gives so much to me that I know it's a part of my life, but I didn't know at what point. But I would say that the turning point for me that really truly let me know that this is what I was supposed to do is when I graduated from college, and this was 2006, after so many years of, you know, being out of it and getting back into school, I fasted about music. You know, like I graduated from college and I was asking God, is this what I should be doing? Because I was going to try to look for a career at that point, and I wanted to really know if I wanted to do music. So I asked God, I fasted about it. And when my fast was finished, he gave me the green light to do music. And that's when everything changed. Like I just kind of started to bet on myself more because of this confirmation I was given. And you know, anything you're seeing in my career that happens with me from that point moving forward is like, I didn't do it at all. This is because God gave me permission to do music. So anything you see me and accomplish, like any album I come out with, any person I work with, is because of that one moment in my career where I asked God, like, is this what I should be doing or not do?
And they, you know, they came around because your dad was rooting for you during the big tune. So in the end, they're really proud of you. And also, KT, if you'll allow me, in a few weeks is the 10th anniversary of your father's death. So I just want to take a moment, say RIP, peace, love, and blessings up to him as well, because right. Man, burying your number one fan on Valentine's Day is heavy. That's a heavy thing.
Yeah, man. Thank you, man. I didn't even really think about that yet. You know, 10 years coming up yet. I know it's coming up soon, but I didn't even think about that yet.
I do have something to say about that, if you'll give me permission.
Yeah, go ahead.
The day that you buried your father, the length of that day from sunrise to sunset was 10 hours and 37 minutes. No other day of the year is 10 hours and 37 minutes long. And the number 1037 has a very, very powerful meaning. And I looked it up for you. The angel number 1037 is a message of congratulations, as you have chosen the right course of action and are traveling well along your life path. Your angels ask that you keep up the great work and keep affirming positive outcomes. You, as one of the chosen ones, must pay attention to the signals that are being sent to you. There is no time for distractions and meaningless purposes. And at this point in your life, you already have enough wisdom and conscience to understand that the Lord and voice can help you in your awakening, but that the will, the work, and the dedication to overcome the challenges must come from you and your daily attitudes. So they can indicate the best path, but you must walk and learn by walking. So are you with me so far?
Yeah, I'm with you. Man, wow.
All right, so I wanted to break down each number. So the angel number one is there to give you motivation to achieve your life's goals so you never give up on your goals. The zero is giving you an opportunity to chase after your dreams. The number three has a spiritual meaning, means that you're finally going to realize that someone is there for you and that someone is supporting you in every way possible. So this angel number is also telling you that you're not alone. So whether you get a butt dial from Buff One and you hear 92.3 samples, right, or a fan comes up to you at a show thanking you for your music because it got them through a tough time, those are like reminders that these people are sending you to keep making music and don't quit. And the number seven is a sign from the heavens that your life is going into a better direction because luck is on your side. So the number 1037 carries a very powerful message of awakening from your material sleep.
Wow, definitely did know that. That's amazing. That's really amazing to hear. Thank you. Man, thanks a lot.
But something a little less heavy. I know your mom must love the jazz stuff that you're doing, I'm sure. Yeah. Because I'm a Beanie is almost like a one-man version of Funktelligence.
I don't know if I'm a Beanie is close to Funktel, but yeah, man, my mom, she loves that, you know, like she's the reason why I love jazz music, you know. So for me to share it with her and see her dance and, you know, like whenever I play anything for her, any new idea or anything, she loves it. She loves to hear it. So it's great that my mom, her and I have that personal relationship we share with jazz. I love it.
So from being a beat maker, though, you always felt like you were trapped behind the grids of bars, loops, sequencing. Now there's no rules to making jazz music. You know, if I was curious, you know, if a jazz artist, let's say a modern jazz musician like Liam Bailey or Yusef Lateef or Kamasi mm-hmm. Washington, right? Let's say if they mm-hmm. wanted to make hip hop, does it work the other way around? Would they want to go from No Limit music making to the limitation of bars, loops, and sequencing? Is that why we never see it the other way around?
Man, I mean, when you use Yusef Lateef and any jazz artist, it's like they're already free. So it's like, why would I think, you know, it's kind of like a freedom you're reaching for when you create that. I think when you're a jazz artist of that caliber, you've already reached it. So like it might be working backwards to want to learn how to sequence. But there are a lot of people that make beats that way. Like I learned to make beats first and then I kind of bloomed into a musician, but I've met musicians on the way that want to learn how to make beats. So they'll ask me and it's not that easy for them because it's not a world that they're from. So I just think it's harder either way. It's kind of difficult either way because they're different worlds. They're worlds that you're not used to creating music in. So it can go either way, but it's tough either way.
Well, educate me a bit. Tell me about a Belgian jazz band called Placebo. What makes them great?
Oh man, they're just the best, man. Like that type of record is like it's undeniably great, you know, and I've grew up with undeniably great records. I grew up on classic records, you know, classic Roy Ayers records and Yusef Lateef records, because he's a jazz artist from Detroit. I'm really into Detroit jazz, so Alvin Jones and my mom was listening to those records. So those are the records that tuned my ear to what amazing music was. So when I hear it, it's just like I connect with the amazing things. So it's just people from my generation, we're all the same. I feel like in that sense that's what we grew up on. That's what we were used to. So I want to identify with that, with my music too as well.
Is that why you have a personal 50 album goal to reach, so we can associate KT with undeniable greatness?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Me and my brother, Jamal Buffer, we got our 50 album goals. So we're trying to reach 50 albums before it's all said and done.
What album are we on now? Do we know?
You know, what's so crazy is I've been working on so many new material that I'm not thinking of the number, but I feel like I'm at like, I want to say like 18, somewhere around there.
Yeah. So we're not even halfway through the legacy of KT.
Yeah. I have to check the number. I don't know. I don't know. But I'm a hit 50 though. I'm willing. I'm a hit 50.
Well, I mean, we're talking about life goals. I don't want to take any more of your time up. So, tell the people where they can find you and what they can look forward to this year.
I know I haven't been on social media as much lately, but you know, I'm usually on Instagram. I like to go in there and post up ideas that I work on in the meantime. So you can follow me on there at i4kt. But if you want any of my music, caragoldmusic.com is where you can get most of my music at.
Well, man, so many of your peers have been on the show. I'm truly honored that you stopped by. Everyone from Shoes, Tall Black Guy, Mark the Clive Lowe, to Filipino Jesus. And now I got the Black Jesus on the show. So I feel complete,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's man, you show a lot of love to all my family. That's all my family there. DJ Redmatic and Apollo and Shoes. And they're all family to me, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I'm glad to be a part of that and be a part of that line. You know, that lineage of everybody being on the show, man. So thank you for having me on here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, I feel like some people buy your music, some people buy a concert ticket. I just happen to create a podcast and give you guys a platform, man. So I'm nothing without the generosity of y'all's time. So I appreciate it, man.
Man, thank you. Thank you.